Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program Martin Vereimeren, who's Managing Director of Industry Practices at Kinaxis. And today we're going to talk about the important role of logistics in enabling risk mitigation and resilience strategies. So, you know, over the past 4 years, due in large part to the COVID, pandemic, there has been a lot of discussion about the importance of risk management and how companies need to create more resilient supply chains, with logistics being a key enabler. We were reminded of this just this week, here in the US, and just a few days ago, when a cargo ship crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, causing its collapse. And in addition, unfortunately, to the tragic, loss of life, supply chains will be impacted for some time as a result of this collapse, which moved, because it is the key entry point for the Port of Baltimore, which moved, over 3 million tons of cargo in 2023. So again, another example there of how day in and day out, different challenges emerge in this industry. So what other supply chain and logistics challenges are companies facing today? How are leading companies mitigating risks and creating more resilient supply chains? And how is technology helping? Well, those are some of the key questions we're going to address in today's episode. And it's great to have Martin on the program to share his insights and advice on this topic. So Martin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Adrian. Thanks for having me. And what a great topic to discuss about. It's not an easy one, right? But it becomes more important by the day to discuss risks and mitigations, resilience, agility, and the like. And yeah. In my current role as managing director, I've kind of privileged to talk to many customers, prospects, companies. And we see quite a lot of similarity across the industries, whether it's high tech or industrial, life science, automotive, retail, even oil and gas. These guys are under pressure, right? And it's not just the disruptions. I'll come to that in a minute. But it's the continuous strive to beat competition, to stay ahead of the game, right? To excel on the operations side, operational excellence, but also to come up with a wow customer experience, basically, to have ultimately high service levels. And then, obviously, we have the disruptions, which seem to be like a new constant. And the ESG or sustainability performance, which also put pressure on the teams and the companies we are talking to. So you already mentioned like the Baltimore Bridge and the ship which basically impacted that bridge, unfortunately. But we went through the COVID crisis, there are military conflicts, the Suez Canal, the Red Sea, and the list goes on. I just before this call checked it out, and on a ship like the one which got stranded in Baltimore, typically there can be like 10,000 40 feet containers on, right?
Right.
Then imagine that there could be, let's say, 20 pallets of products or goods in each of these containers. Then there are 60 kind of boxes in each of these pallets again. Now, if you do the math, it leads to like 12 million products which get impacted because of a stranded ship. It means like it impacts an economy, society even. So these things which seem to be local and small have a true cascading effect across the supply chain, across economies even. And what we see these days, and that's really striking, and it's generic across all industries, the boards, they ask their CEOs to come in, right? So here we are. We are exposed to all these risks. What are you going to do next time, Guy? And the CEO is then tasked to come up with a mitigation plan. And he knocks on the shoulder or calls the chief supply chain officer in. Said, come on, what's our plan, right? We need to do our regular thing, the customer service and the operational excellence. But now also we need to get more agile to cope with resilience and disruptions. And at the same time, we also need to get more green. ESG, sustainability standards, it all comes to the minds of these leaders, basically. So, yeah. That's what I think the most burning thing, how to deal with the diffusion of demands, of requirements being put on the plate of the CEO and the chief supply chain officer, VP supply chain, VP logistics, and so on.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up a lot of great points there. I mean, number one is, the elevated role that supply chain logistics has within the organization, where now it's, I remember when I first started in this industry, over 25 years ago, most CEOs, CFOs, probably couldn't even spell supply chain, right? I mean, it was it was something that they were not, did not have a strong pulse on. And certainly over the past 4 or 5 years, certainly since COVID, that has, supply chain is now being talked about in the C-suite. So I think that's one, key, change over the years. You talked about, sustainability. It's another factor that companies are, a new factor now that has to get introduced into the balancing equation that supply chain logistics professionals need to incorporate along with cost and service and reliability and risk mitigation and the like. And then even here, you talk about disruptions. We were just talking about the Baltimore crash and the ripple effects that it has, right? Because now, not only with the loss of product, which is the kind of the immediate impact to anyone that was in that ship, but now you've got a port that, their operations are going to be disrupted for some time. So now you have to divert, some future shipments to perhaps New York or Virginia or other places. So that's going to add lead time. That's going to add, again, additional modes of transportation perhaps that need to be added into this. So, I mean, the reality is that once a disruption occurs, it really has a ripple effect into transportation, into inventory management, into visibility, into customer, end customer experience and the like. And then trying to balance all of that with, the corporate objectives of the company in terms of continuing to grow, to continue to scale, continue to be, profitable and so forth. I mean, that is, to your point, I think that regardless of what industry, and you work with a lot of clients in different industry, that is certainly, top of mind for many of them. So I guess this is my next question is really, what are leaders doing, in response to these challenges? I mean, how are they leveraging logistics, right, to mitigate, these risks and create more resilient supply chains?
So just going back and to reiterate a bit, right? That single ship with so many containers and pallets and products, has a cascading or rippling effect across the supply chain. So these manufacturers, get impacted because their materials do not get in. They need to change their production schedules, right? They need to change their commit dates. Distributors, they need to change their maybe assortment for a while or go for different sources for a certain period of time. And think of retailers who might get impacted, who might maybe need to change their promotions and so on. So it's a big thing. Now, first of all, what we see leaders, the most successful ones, basically, they recognize that there is a problem, yeah? That supply chain and logistics are at the heart of the success and failure of their company. And not just of their company, but also of their customers, yeah? And the business to do with customers. And typically these days, also, kind of more noble objectives are being strived for with companies. So how does it impact society well-being? Think of healthcare and access to critical medicines and so on, yeah? But also, how does it, impact or harm or protect the planet? So it's not just the operational aspect. It's also way more the bigger equation companies get aware of. And the leaders we are talking of would like to address this problem. What they mainly see is that the current way of supply chain management, the current technique, is not working anymore. So for decades, they recognize they have worked in a very cascaded fashion. So typically think of, if I take supply chain planning, there have been financial budgets and some sales forecast, and then another department gets spreadsheets and continues with demand planning. Another department continues with inventory planning. Another department, days later, starts master production scheduling. Another department thereafter does a capacity check. Another department thereafter might go into a supply forecast. So now the entire cycle might take a week. Yeah. So the supply chain planning side, these companies recognize we need to get this done differently. And the same holds for the logistics side of the business. So typically think of logistics, right? Orders come in a sales system, in a platform, a CRM system or so. Then they typically are transferred into some ERP system. From the ERP system, a day later, they get into a warehouse system. And once the process has been finished there, it goes into a carrier or shipping system. And thereafter, maybe to a port system and maybe in a final mile system. And thereafter, maybe in a return system. So again, a very cascaded and slow approach. And there is recognition that this will not be enough for the future going forward, right? You will not be sustainable. It's too siloed, it's slow, it's suboptimal, it's very static, and there's a lot of suspicion between all the parties. They all, let's say, keep their cards close to their chest, and it's far from the ultimate objective of a perfect order, basically. So Sales is a different island. Supply chain is an island, and also logistics still is an island. Not agile, not efficient, not fast, not compliant. So what we see with the leaders of today who understand is that they want to go for a breakthrough. Yeah? Something which is way more, as we call it these days at Kinaxis, more concurrent, but think of more real time and integral. Not just working for planning alone, for supply chain alone, not just working for logistics alone, but also putting supply chain and logistics around one virtual table to get to a level of orchestration where the commercial side, the supply chain inventory side, as well as the logistics and transportation side get being reviewed and steered, let's say around one table with one directive. And the final point I would like to make is that typically companies should not and are not limiting themselves anymore to just their own sites, but also are aware that their critical suppliers and distribution channels are a vital element of their supply chain network and also need to get a place around this table to better orchestrate in a more, let's say, what I call now here, a concurrent fashion, a more real-time fashion.
Yeah, a lot of great points. And if I heard you correctly, I mean, I heard three things there that you said. You know, the first one, which I think is a great point, is that leading companies have moved away from this, you know, have had a mind shift away from thinking of, let's say, logistics as a cost center and really view it as a competitive differentiator, as part of a key enabler of the company's strategic, you know, to be able to help the company achieve its strategic objectives, right? So really taking a more strategic view of supply chain and logistics versus in the past where, you know, particularly on the logistics side, a lot of companies viewed it as simply just a cost center and really didn't view it as strategic. The second thing I heard was that leaders are really, they're recognizing that, hey, if we're running our operations, our supply chain logistics operations, like it's still 1999 or 1980, which is historically has been defined as, you know, very siloed, you know, very fragmented, you know, technology that's outdated, so on and so forth, you're not really going to be in a position, you know, for success. So it's really taking you know, recognizing that the people, the processes, the technologies that might have worked back in 1999, or even 2000, or even maybe 2010, are not necessarily going to be the ones that are going to drive success today and moving forward. So it's making that, you know, making that recognition. I think the third piece is that I heard, that last point that you made, is that, you know, companies don't operate in a silo, right? They recognize that there's an ecosystem, you know, out there, with suppliers, of logistics service providers, of customers. And it's how do you incorporate and communicate and collaborate effectively with this ecosystem of partners, you know, that you have, and how to approach all of this, you know, all these processes and all these partners in a more concurrent, synchronized way, orchestrated way, to use your terminology, versus the siloed, sequential, you know, way. So, and I, you know, I, in many ways, you're preaching to the choir here, because, you know, I agree with all of those points. And of course, this is where we've seen a similar, movement on the technology front, which is obviously, you know, going to be my next question here, where we've moved, you know, we've kind of moved into this era where we're now talking about platforms. We're now talking about, you know, network-based systems, right? We've kind of moved away from these islands of 10, 15 different applications to run your supply chain to try to, you know, in order to achieve this concurrent, this orchestration, you really need to have, you know, a platform in place that really is able to look at these things concurrently. So let's talk about the role that technology plays here. I mean, what capabilities are most important? And of course, there's so much buzz and hype today around AI, but I assume that this is an area where AI will have a greater impact moving forward as well. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. Technology is key in the end, but let me first start with the need again. The need I just discussed is not solely manifest for brand owners, right? It's not just manufacturers or distributors or retailers. The logistics service providers around there are equally being impacted by the risks and the need for resilience, because you know, they are the arm basically of the shippers to help them in the perfect logistics. So also logistics service providers need to, let's say, better connect to the brand owners to work on more integral models for orchestration, and that's a nice bridge maybe to the technology. So what is required is definitely, let's say, integral collaboration across these parties, across the teams, across the functions. Yeah. Next to the integral element, it should be instant, real time, instant visibility and control, not batch wise, not periodic, not sequential, right? And third, it should be all around intelligent optimization. Across planning functions, across execution functions, but even across planning execution with closed feedback loops. Okay? And then, as I mentioned to you, ideally, not just focusing and limiting itself to your own notes, but also include the external notes. And then the technology needs to enable. No, the thing I'm just trying to explain is so complex. You cannot do this anymore with emails or Excel or an ERP system, right? It's so specific. Typically, by the way, also when I look at the system landscapes, the companies I speak to typically have multiple ERPs, warehouse systems, sales systems, and so on. So it's a kind of an illusion to think that you can put it all in one system. You need to respect that there are different processes, different roles who already have some level of digitization. And now the question becomes, how can you span across all these given systems and processes a cloud platform which help you to transform to more next levels of digitization? Yeah. And there we see that AI definitely does play a big role. Obviously, it seems to be like a hype now. But beyond the hype, we have experience, extensive experience with the value of AI. And it is a technology, right? Which is not just the Gen AI we now see a lot of hype about, but it's also a lot about mathematical AI. And what we see is that supply chain, let's say, needs a lot of mathematical AI. Yeah? However, from a human interaction perspective, the Gen AI is great. Yeah? So what we are seeing and what we believe in and what will also change the future and help all of us is that Gen AI and math AI will come to a happy marriage where the user interaction becomes more simple, but in the end, the ultimate sophistication is not in the large language models, but does come from, let's say, the mathematical AI, the deep learning and machine learning. Also, I want to make a comment, artificial intelligence is not just about machine learning. So there are also, let's say, heuristics around, very efficient, very effective, and they can do many jobs better than AI, right? Same holds for some true optimization, so mathematical optimization, linear programming, mathematical programming. These techniques, they exist already for a while, still have their value and are needed. So we see AI as a kind of blend of machine learning, including deep learning, heuristics, as well as optimization techniques. And this blend of methods should be transparent for the end user and for the companies. But the digital platform, the cloud platform, should support these different technologies under the hood to come up with smart answers to all those difficult questions. Two more comments on AI. What we also notice is that AI is also about acceptance, right? Do you believe the outcomes of that black box? The miracle or the oracle is speaking. Do you take it for granted? So we see that there is a lot of interest and there's a criticality around, let's say, explainability. Can you explain how the model, how the system, how the AI machine came to the outcomes? Explainability is one. And the other point on technology and AI in particular is about productization. So we see many companies doing experiments with data scientists. They have groups. The CIO has appointed a special team task force, and they do all kind of magic, right? They pull data from multiple systems. They try to normalize it, ETL it, put it in a model, experiment with many models and parameters, and then qualify one for production, basically. Put it in production and then it runs for a while, but then it gets outdated, right? It needs to be refreshed. And then you need to feed it again with new material. That's a very cumbersome and manual activity in many cases. So what we believe in and what we are working on and also creating first successes with is to help companies with, let's say, productized AI so that they can focus on true business problems around supply chain, around logistics, and then offer them, let's say, built-in models which are smart enough to extract the right data and to tune themselves with the right parameters and also to deploy themselves in real life processes and also to learn over time, to refresh their minds, their brains with the latest.
A lot of great points there about AI. I mean, what we found is, even in our research with our Indago supply chain research community, for example, I mean, a lot of supply chain logistics executives are still on kind of the learning curve about what AI means. And there's still a lot of confusion out there, a lot of education process. And I think, you brought up a lot of great, points about it. I mean, I think there's this tendency to think of AI as this, magic bullet or this very specific monolithic thing. But in reality, it's a big umbrella term. And there's a lot of things that fall under that terminology, or at least a lot of things that people are applying the AI label to that may or may not necessarily be AI in itself. But the reality is that there's a lot of different, it's not necessarily the right solution for the right type of problem all the time. And that a lot of the other types of methodologies that have been used for a long time in the supply chain logistics world, still have a role and are still relevant, today, depending on the specific problem or the specific role that you're trying to, to address. So I think that's a, that's a critical, point there. I think the other reality is that, a lot of these things have already existed for some time, and they're invisible to the end user because, like you said, there's a lot of it's mathematics that's taking place in the background. A lot of it's being automated, and to the end user, they don't realize that they've been using some of these things, for a long time because they're not math, experts and so forth. So for a lot of folks, a lot of end users, it's really going to play a role in the background, aside from let's say the Gen AI, piece of it. But to your point, you have to build that trust and transparency for the users to understand, at least at a high level, how the solution works, so that they can have trust that what the output is something that's going to be actionable to drive, the results. The other thing you said that I think is important too, from a technology standpoint, is that you're right. Particularly when you're thinking about it from a broad supply chain network perspective, is that the reality is that there's a multitude of systems that are out there, and you're never and because you have multiple parties, each with their own systems, you're never going to get to that, state where you're going to have everything just encased into one single application. So, the platform that you use really needs to, you really think about how you're going to bring in data and particularly real-time data from multiple systems, and how is that going to be consumed and acted upon, and then how is that going to go back out to all the different participants, so that everyone stays as coordinated and synchronized, as possible. So I think those are all, great points. Martin, we're running, short on time here. So I think maybe as a way to wrap up, I mean, what questions should companies ask themselves to assess whether they have the right people, the right processes, and the right technologies to succeed moving forward?
Yeah. I had a few keywords in mind, which are criticality, maturity, digitization, and movement. Let me try to explain those. Right? So criticality, like ask yourself as a company, like, is supply chain critical for us, for our success, for our customers, for our operations, for our sustainability, for our resilience, basically, right? Do we just want to serve customers, or do we also have noble goals around society and a better planet and so on in mind? Are we sufficiently equipped? Then do a maturity analysis. Are we still siloed across our commercial roles, supply chain roles, and logistics roles, or not? Yeah. Do we have a unified view of our forecast and plans and sales orders and purchase orders and shipment orders and transfer bookings? Or are these still residing with different teams and different systems and, kind of more manually synchronized in a delayed fashion in a cascaded sequential manner? Yeah. If you conclude that supply chain performance is of a critical nature for your company, and that your maturity is, let's say, not enough, then scratch your head and kind of admit or recognize that you need to invest in digitization, right? The good thing is, like, you can still respect your existing systems, but you need to invest in something extra. That heterogeneous landscape needs to be complemented with a cloud platform, which can add missing capabilities. Missing capabilities typically to come to more integral, instant, and intelligent optimization around your plans and your orders, combining and merging the worlds of planning and logistics, because that's what we see sometimes still not being understood. People start investing in technology, trying to make steps to get more mature and to hit those critical KPIs, but still then, again, take two siloed initiatives, one for the planning side of the business and one for the logistics side of the business. So please, 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 if you would like to do something, take both into account and make it one program, one project. And then I come to the last point. movement, right? In order to get something done, you need to create a movement, a bigger momentum, yeah? Which starts with obviously a grand story, a vision, a mission, to mobilize resources, to create enthusiasm, to get believers. Then also the more hard side of the equation, you need to specify goals and need to ensure commitment from the top leadership, right? And buy-in from people. You also need to communicate this with a lot of passion so that people understand it and also become believers. And then you start a real journey because not everything can be done overnight. But you should start with the first feasible step towards that, you know, grand picture, that dot on the horizon. And our advice is always take something which is urgent and feasible, a scope where you can basically create success and with a quick time to value, prove something within 1 quarter. And we have seen that this is doable. So despite all the abstract words, the big concepts, the generative AI and buzzwords and so on, boil it down to something doable, practical, and get it done. And then also maybe once you have achieved the success after, let's say, within a quarter, also cope with the people who are a bit more skeptical and let's say, love their current comfort zone maybe a lot. Because I've seen that also then, if you start proving successes, they also get passionate, right? They become active participants of that movement towards supply chain orchestration to mitigate risks and to become more agile and to become more resilient, to be better in the market, to be better for society, to be better for the planet.
Martin, a lot of great you know, words of advice and you know, insights there. I particularly like, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier in terms of, you know, if you were operating back in 1999, you know, treating planning and execution as separate entities was the norm then. And unfortunately, I think it's the norm for a lot of companies still today. So I think that's one of the key questions companies need to ask is, are we still managing our planning and our execution in a sequential way as separate entities, or are we trying to take a more integrated approach? And I think that's a key question to kind of help set the stage for, you know, for future success. And your last point there about, you know, it's very easy to become overwhelmed by everything that we've talked about and the kind of these big picture things. But I think starting small, you know, identifying something that's you know, realistic, executable, where you can achieve success in the near term. You know, success always breeds success. And then you can get the buy-in from others that might be skeptical when you actually see the, you know, the results. So I think that's excellent advice there as well. Well, Martin, I mean, I think we could probably go on talking for hours about all these different topics because this is such a, you know, such a meaty topic. But again, thank you for making the time to be with us and sharing your insights and perspective on this.
Yeah, thank you. So the best companies, right, they embrace complexity in order to not miss the boat, but become the leaders of tomorrow. Great to talk to you today, Adrian, and we'll be in touch.
Great. I want to thank those of you that joined us. If you're watching this episode on demand, either at the Kinaxis website or on Talking Logistics, and you've got a question or a comment for Martin, you can post it there. I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.